Accession number 30623, reel 6.
Accession number 30623, Mr. Terry O'Leary, reel 6. Now, you'd formed this convoy, and,
yes.
And you were carrying who? You were carrying on your ship?
We were carrying men from the King's Royal Rifle Corps with their Bren gun carriers. We were carrying ammunition, and we were carrying on the forecastle large number of jerry cans of petrol. I recall that well because the captain of the ship, a Greek, when he saw what was being loaded on the forecastle, which was gasoline or petrol, he did at one stage say that he wasn't going to sail while all this lot was on the forecastle. But anyway, he was convinced that he was going to sail, and in the event, we did sail with all this gear on, because when they got, we sailed up, as I say, up to...
What was the voyage like?
Quite non-eventful, really, except that we did hit some weather, and they hove to for a while, and we pulled into an island called the Greek island of... While the weather went, it was only about a matter of 8 hours and it had passed. And then when they got to the outskirts of Piraeus, which is the naval port of Athens, they encountered one of the largest, so the records say, minefields in the area. And I actually saw one of our motor launches, which were also sweeping mines, get blown up. And I met one of the subsequently met one of the chaps in London, pre-arranged, who was fortunately off of that motor launch. He escaped, but quite a few of the crew were killed. And it was a very heavy minefield. They were blowing up mines. You know, the sweepers did a marvellous job. But otherwise, there would have been a lot more casualties than... Anyway, we arrived in Piraeus. And it was rough that day. And it was decided that the actual landing was going to... Because there was no opposition. The Germans had virtually... decided it was time to pull out of the Balkans, and that they would go, the landing would take place the next morning. But the Greek sailors on our ship, on this merchant ship, Greek Royal Navy chaps, they were keen to get ashore, and I think they overruled everybody and decided they were going to go. And we thought, well, you know, I mean, it's a chance too good to miss. So some of us went with them. And so we were ashore in Piraeus before the actual landing, although I understand that paratroopers had already landed at the airport of Salonika, some 5 or 6 miles away. So we weren't the first ones there, but we were certainly the first ones of the... convoy that were ashore, and treated very, very well, I might add. So once we got ashore, you know, the crowds were unbelievable.
So there's a friendly reception from the Greeks.
Very, very friendly. Very, very friendly, yeah.
And what happened next then?
Well, then we managed to get to Ammonia Square in Athens. I remember boarded a lorry or something, and that was even more wild, you know, loads of shouting and cheering and
to where square?
Ammonia Square, which is the main square in Athens.
And what were you doing there?
Well, just generally trying to reap the benefit of getting back to Greece. Like, you know, it was just a celebration, rather like the peace celebration in London. You know, loads of people and shouting. I saw the first guards being put back onto... the palace in Athens, the F-zones, as they're known. They had been removed by the Germans, I understand, and they had just been reunited with the palace and were in their national costume outside the palace, which crowds of people were watching and cheering. Yeah.
Then what? What do you remember next?
We went back to the ship and landed the next day. And when we landed, we went ashore as a naval party, and the Greeks had found a German in civilian clothes, which I could only imagine must have been left behind as a fifth column to do what, because when they told us they had him, and we went with them, he was chained to a wall and had been viciously beaten. His face was shocking. And our Chief Petty Officer Stoker told them that he was not to be, manhandled and that, and that tomorrow, this was in the evening, tomorrow he was going to be taken by the Royal Navy to be handed over to the British Royal Navy in the event the next morning he was found shot dead in this cellar where he was held. Someone had shot him during the night. Thereafter then, we went back to unloaded all, everything was unloaded, like, and all the troops. And then we sailed on Ionia up to Salonika. Because, as I say, we were in khaki Navy hats. It was a naval shore party where we were on a special service with revolvers, and which
you were all dressed in khaki.
Yeah, khaki. Yeah. I did have a photograph. Unfortunately, I sent it home. It was the only one I had of me in the khaki, taken in Salonika, and it went adrift, and I've never seen it since. But I did manage to get one photograph. That was not uncommon though, because naval shore parties, that was how they were dressed, like, you know. And so we
you
went.
You went. The ship went to Salonika, and then you went ashore. Is that, that's right. Yeah. Yep. You didn't go by land.
No, we went by ship. To the harbour of Salonika, where we went ashore. All our stores were, taken off, and we opened up a naval shore wireless station of Salonika Harbour, in a four-story hotel. We were at the top. The wireless station was opened up there, and the signal, visual signal, signalers were up there as well, overlooking the harbour along a main. You've got overlooking the harbour. You've got the docks at one end. You've got this long road, a normal road, no sea wall, but just the sea. And then a white tower is at the other end of the street. That's be about a mile long, I suppose, or three quarters of a mile long, along the front. And we were plonked straight in the middle, and that's where we controlled the ships in the harbour by Morse and by radio telephony, RT,
So, now, had you had much experience of telephony?
Oh, yeah, I beg your pardon. Yeah, that was... I failed to mention that was part of the training as a telegraphist. You did RT and WT, wireless telegraphy and radio telephony.
Tell us a bit about the telephony.
Well, you just basically all it was learning the code that they use now, like the police use. Ours was Abel, Baker, Charlie, Dog. I can't recall all of them. There have been two changes since I used it, and
was this a method of an order of speaking as well, or was it just
like the police use now? If they read in a number plate, they would say X-ray Victor, and that's how you spoke for letters,
Was there anything else to it, or was it just phonetic alphabet?
Just phonetic alphabet.
So there was no order of speech or over and out or anything?
Oh, yes, you did all... That was the normal RT procedure,
You have to learn that.
Oh, you have to learn it, yeah. But, I'd already learnt it. I forgot to mention it because I was concentrating on the telegraphy. But we had already learnt radio telephony. Yeah, it was part of your training as a telegraphist.
Now, so you were based in this hotel?
No, the station, the signal station was based there. Our accommodation was in a rather grand house about 400 yards along the seafront towards the White Tower. There was a hotel there. I've been back. It is now the consulate for the American Embassy. They're in that building now.
So was that comfortable?
Very nice. Yeah, very, very nice. Yeah.
Now, how were the Greeks reacting? Because there was trouble amongst them. Certainly in December, there was actual fighting.
Yeah, it was, yeah. There was fighting in Athens.
How did you notice any change in the
atmosphere? Oh, yes, because we had them. We had the Elas around our area. They were in the mountains around Salonika. And to show that they were around, in the morning, about 6 o'clock, you would hear a galloping of hooves, and along this seafront would come the men and women, very rough-looking crowd with cross bandoliers and guns mounted on horses, and they would ride right down just to let the Greek people know that they were there. But we never came in, you know, never had any, any fighting with them.
They weren't shooting or sniping?
No.
Well, did the Greek civilians gradually seem to go anti?
Well, no, you had two factions. You had the royalists and you had the anti-royalists. I'm speaking about the civilian population now. And we were, I recall seeing a very big street fight along this front. In fact, we were looking down from Navy House, looking down on it, and I saw one, these two factions met and started fighting. And I can recall seeing, it horrified me to see a woman dragging another woman by her hair along the street, along the road. And I mean, it was vicious. There was certainly a big anti-royalists faction there.
And a big royalist faction.
Oh, and a big royalist faction too. It was, you know.
But they weren't taking it out on you?
No. We never. We were told purposely not to never discuss or, you know, anything about it. We were just there as to do a job of seeing ships in and out of the harbour. Because is it not UNICEF? United Nations Americans were delivering food to the Greeks then. And these ships used to come in with all their wheat and all that.
Now, how did you get on with the Greeks of either side when you met them?
Very good. I have very fond memories of Greece, and I've been back. I took my wife back to where we were, and I've been back twice myself. It's the only place I've ever returned to, and I absolutely like the Greek people. Very, very friendly. I found the ones who I met were very, very friendly. Very, very nice people.
And what would you go out in the bars and things?
No, I did manage to get what they called up homers, which is a naval expression for getting your feet under the table with the family. And we used to go around there. And
they were Greeks?
They were Greeks. So,
and which faction were they, or were they not anything?
Well, I never asked them, and they never told me. It was just that they were friendly to me, and I was friendly to them. And
so what would you do when you went to that? I mean, because it must have been very different.
Oh, they'd eat. That's where I first had the Greek tomatoes and salad, Greek salad. I had Greek salad there. And mind you, we used to give them cigarettes and, you know, I mean, just friendly. No, they would. I got my first ouzo there. Mavrodaphne was another Greek sweet wine that I've purchased since over here. I like Greek people.
Ouzo is pretty strong.
Well, I've got a couple of bottles in there. It's like absinthe, almost the same stuff. You're considered a bit chicken if you put water with it and it goes cloudy, milky. But you're supposed to drink it rather like the Russians drink vodka, you know.
So did you ever get drunk? Because that's easy to get drunk on that stuff.
Well, I can't recall sort of not getting back to barracks or anything. So I suppose I had my share, I suppose you'd say, yeah.
Now, anything happened? I mean, any incidents in your job, or that you remember?
No, not in the job, because there was what they call a bar boat, and it was the HMS Barclays. It's a boom defence vessel, and what they have is they don't have a large bow. Their bow is rounded, and they have two very large what they called horns that stuck out over the forecastle. And what their job was to draw the nets, as the name implies, boom nets to close the against submarines. Not there, but that is their job. And we used to have one tied right up opposite Navy House, so that if there was any trouble, we had to sets had to be thrown out of the window. This was our what's it? And we Just were then to board this boom defence vessel. The job they were actually doing was when the Germans left, there are large concrete blocks about 8 foot square that hold these buoys in position. When a buoy is planted, it's not just floating on its own. It's secured by a gigantic concrete block with a cable. And there are hundreds of them in the docks, and the Germans planted these alongside the wall so that ships with a decent depth couldn't get alongside. So the boom defence vessel was lifting these and either taking them to the docks, because I did see some there when I returned, or I take them out into deep water and just disposing of them. But we had a machine gun with an army guy at the foot of the stairs, because it was like a circular staircase, and right at the bottom by the door of Navy House.
Navy House is where the hotel was with the wireless station.
Yes, right, yeah. And that was there was a Bren gun there, light machine gun, in case, I suppose, anybody did try and break into the wireless station, which they never did. So all in all, it was a pretty quiet time.
So what happens next? What's the next thing you remember?
I remember that we one of the Stoker POs, I don't know how he got his hands on it, got on a lovely German seagoing motor launch. Very upmarket job, twin engine diesel. I'm not sure if they were what the engines were. I remember him explaining it all to us. And we had a great time going out on that and swimming in the middle of Salonika Harbour until some army officers came along and confiscated it. Decided that they should have it and not us. But that was a beautiful launch, really was. Really nice. Big. Yeah. After that, when I was told that I was being returned. How long was I there? About till July, I think. I was being returned to...
So a full year, July 44 to July 45. So you'd be out there when VE Day was on. That's June 45.
When war ceased.
Well, in Europe, yeah.
Yeah, I was, because I recall a signal coming over to say that the war had ceased. And within... 36 hours, we got a message from RAF that a bomber had sunk a German lighter somewhere in the Aegean, and that was after the war ceased. Yeah, yes, it was.
Any celebrations?
No, we had none. No. In actual fact, you will find on your records that what I'm telling you is not mentioned on records. There is nothing in my records to say that I served in Greece. There is nothing in the army records of that period that the British Army was in Greece. How they said about the chaps who were killed in Athens, I don't know how they covered that, because quite a number of soldiers were killed. what they said was they served in the Eastern Mediterranean. That was the words that covered the, because the Greeks issued a medal for service in Greece, and I've got the paper where I wrote away to the Admiralty, and it said that it shows that I was serving on HMS Ionia up till December. Well, that's true, because, pardon me, then I went ashore. But there's nothing to say that I was in Salonika or any service with the Greek Navy. It's not mentioned. Not mentioned. And when someone told me about this medal, I wrote away and they said, well, the medal is what they gave us was those who served there, you probably see it on there, I'm wearing the Italy Star. And they gave the Italy Star to the troops that served in Greece. That was the award that was made. And when I asked about this Greek medal, I was told, well, you can apply for it, but it's not to be worn. It is a commemorative medal only, and it is you can apply for it by writing to the Greek embassy in London and showing your records. Well, and they say the records we have show that you were served at this period, about December, they say HMS Ionia, whereas we knew it as HHMS, and it flew the Greek flag, not the British flag. And it seems to have been, I don't know, like a veil drawn over it for some reason. I don't know why.
So what happened when you leave? You leave, what, July?
Yeah, I went down by motor torpedo boat back to Alexandria.
And then what?
I then was there for a while. Then I boarded one of the Italian cruisers that had been surrendered to the Royal Navy. The Giuseppe Garibaldi was the name of the cruiser. And from there I took passage. I wasn't working on the ship, just took passage down to back to Malta. But I was surprised by the amount of aluminium on the ship as opposed to ours, which was steel. All their ladders were made of aluminium. The deck on the mess decks, you could stamp on them and feel them vibrate but the speed was phenomenal of them. But it was the aluminium, the amount of aluminium on them that surprised me, I recall that. And I went back to Malta, sorry. Or I went to Malta. And I was then told that I was being drafted to a Bay-class frigate, the HMS St. Austell Bay.
Now, so when did you get to Malta, roughly?
Just prior to the atom bomb being dropped. When
that's
that?
August. August 6th, I think. The atom bomb.
Yeah, I got there about August 45. I think it was early August 45.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened with it?
So I was drafted to this, and it was an anti-aircraft frigate, and where it was going...
And that was the Bay of St. Austell?
No, it's an HMS St. Austell Bay.
I've got it wrong.
Yeah, they're all Bay-class frigates. They were all named after bays, St. Bride's Bay, and I was on St. Austell Bay.
And what was this she like? What was your first impression of her as an
anti-aircraft? I was very pleased because really it was the first Royal Naval ship that I'd been on all my service. That had a full Royal Naval crew. And what they were going out to the... They had been commissioned, laid down and commissioned as anti-aircraft frigates to go to the Far East because of the trouble they were having with the kamikaze planes, and in the event the atom bomb was dropped, so it was not proceeded with. They never went out to the Far East. What we did then was...
And you were still a telegraphist?
Oh, yeah, I remained a telegraphist, yeah.
So, Where was the wireless room? Was it well, wireless room?
It was a wireless room. Yeah, it was a.
What was the wireless room like?
I remember it was covered with linoleum. That was a first impression, like, you know, and radio sets around the wall, and you
where
just.
Where was it in the ship?
It was astern of the bridge, and behind the funnel, down on the, what would you call it? Just not quite amidships, but below.
It's all right. So, and what about your mess deck? Was it a communication mess
deck? Yeah, we were up on the forecastle because the communication ratings were kept separate from the ship's crew for fear of spreading buzzes of rumours and people asking you questions. So we were right up in the forecastle. On the starboard side was the where we were, and on the port side was the signallers and coders. But all the communications ratings were on one mess deck, yeah. And you did your own catering. They allowed you so much money, and if you wanted extra peaches and that.
Then well, tell me about the I know food's not your thing, but that's that's canteen messing.
It is.
I know it sounds as if it shouldn't be, but
it is.
You bought
it
the food from the canteen and cooked it yourself.
You did.
Cook of the mess and all that. That's how it. Did it all work?
Well, it was we had cooks on board in the galley, and they would decide what the main course was for the day. Like, say it was beef, so what you would do was the cook of the mess, who was changed every day, although you tried to keep the same guy, if you did his work for him, he would do it because he was a dab hand at various jobs. So he would go up, collect the meat, bring it back in a dish. The potatoes we would peel, that was placed around, and just and the vegetables, and then it was taken back to the galley where it was be cooked by the cooks, and then a pipe would go out about midday, cooks to the galley, which meant they were going up now to pick up their stuff and fetch it back to the individual messes. What I failed to say was I had my 21st birthday in Malta, and that was the first time that I had my tot of rum, and thereafter.
Hang on, I'll come back.
Okay.
Tell us about that. So what was the food like as a result of this?
Yeah, it was quite good. I mean, you had chaps there who could knock up duffs. Figgy Duff was one that they all had names for various dishes. I think, was it rail smash was where you had bacon and tomatoes, because the tomatoes resembled a nasty smash. You had plum duff. Some of these guys were quite good at making puddings. I must confess I wasn't, but they would do it for you if they were off watch and they knew you weren't very good, and obviously it was to their advantage because they were going to eat the meal. And but each, how many of this were there? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. I think there were about 14 of us to our mess. And you slept in hammocks above the actual mess deck table. So if...
Now, what was it like sleeping in hammocks? I mean, I can...
I found them lovely. No problem.
From the start.
Yeah.
So what's so good about them?
Well, you had a stretcher. Two wooden stretchers. Not like the hammocks that you imagine that when you get in it folds over you. You had... I can't... the technical name, but you had like strings coming down about eight from a hook or from a ring. What you could do, you made stretchers or get a chippy to make them for you, pieces of wood with a V at each end, and you put these at the top, and that left the hammock open. The hammock was open then. You had a palliasse with a cover over the patio, and you had this white blanket, which I referred to earlier, and then you just swung yourself up into the hammock. Although some blokes were lazy, I think they used to call it hot sleeping or something. If one bloke was on watch and he was following you, rather than sling his hammock, he would hop into yours after you got out, so his would be, yours would be nice and warm for him to, and vice versa. Like, you know. But the trouble came when breakfast was up, and you'd come off a morning watch, which was 4 till 8. And when you slung yourself out of the hammock onto the table, you were treading between the butter and the margarine, and because you had to get onto the table to get down onto the deck. And they took a dim view of that sometimes, right?